welcome to Bagel Tech Mac, the weekly Mac show from the Bagel Tech Network, where we discuss all things Macintosh, iDevices, iPhones, iPads, iPod touches, and anything else that takes our fancy. I'm joined at the moment by top left, Mr. Will Green, who's screwing around with something. Oh, he's starting a pipe.
I've been looking for my matches.
Will is starting a pipe, and the video's frozen. Jolly good. There we go. Oh, apparently the device is being used by another application, which it's not. That's what Logic does for you. How are you doing, Will?
I'm very well. I'm very well, yourself?
Excellent. Yes, fine. Thanks, pal. No, not too bad at all. How's the training business this week?
Well, sort of on par with the previous weeks.
Jolly good. So you're sitting there smoking a pipe and drinking red wine.
Yeah, that's about the score.
Excellent, mate. Next to him, we have our resident guru for tech, Mr. Dr. Happy Mac Andrew Stevenson. How you doing, mate? Stevens?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad this week.
Excellent week or so-so week?
First quiet week of the year, actually. Bit of time tootling around the studio, which obviously means that I have to tidy up after myself, but hopefully next week I'll pick back up again.
Good, man. Below him, Kyle Swagger, our stalwart. How's it going, mate?
Good. How about yourself?
Yeah, I'm okay. I finally got myself showered and dressed. I was taking a back this morning for the photo show. I haven't got anywhere today. Never mind.
Yeah, cleaned up nice there, mate.
And quite possibly the only 23-year-old awake at 5 o'clock in the morning and looking half decent is Mr. Eric Lanigan. How you doing, man? Thanks for coming
Great
back.
Great, Ewan. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm all right. Just adding a messing around with bloody tech stuff this morning, trying to get it to work, and it still doesn't work. The week in Mac news, then. It's not been a really good week, has it? I mean, it's just kind of been a little bit sad and a little bit lame. We've got a question. Shall we start with a question rather than the news? Reverse the order a bit.
Why not?
The question comes from a guy called Mark, who's in Camberley. And he says he's got the 15-inch MacBook Pro, the old-style one where you can take the battery out of it, and he's getting the message that the battery is nearing replacement. It's starting to crap out. Is there anything that he can do to stop himself from having to buy the £100 battery that the Apple stores told him that he needs in Kingston? So that's a hell of a task. Now, I haven't had this message before. What's the general kind of elevation of messages on your MacBook as far as batteries going out?
Well, it depends what OS you're on. 10.5, you don't get a lot of messages. You just get one that says battery not charging. But 10.6 does a lot more battery reporting from the menu bar, and you get replace soon, replace now, or service battery, or a whole range of little reports in there.
All right, he's got the replace soon. So... Mm. What are the options here, Andrew, or aren't there any?
Well, the first thing he should do is pop along to the system profiler, click on the Apple menu, click on About This Mac, click on More Info, and then you've got the system profiler up on the screen. Scroll down the left-hand side and you'll see the power settings. Click on that and you can have a look at the state of the battery. It'll tell him how many cycles the battery's been through. And the condition of the battery, which will probably match that in the menu bar saying replace soon.
So it's for a certain number of cycles where Apple will just go, sorry, mate, too many cycles there.
Yeah, basically Apple will state that you should start losing charge and sort of ability to hold a charge after 300 cycles, which means 300 charges and discharges of the battery. So if you get halfway down and you plug it in and you charge it up, that's half a cycle. Etc. So after 300, you do get an appreciable hit in the battery's ability to retain a charge.
Wow, 300, even just if you go down a little bit and plug back in, you could easily surpass that in a year, it sounds like, if you just use it every day.
I was going to say, that's a year.
Yes, it is.
Not even.
I mean, in general use, I've found that, you know, it's 300, you'd be down to about 80% of the battery's performance, according to Apple.
So they included. That's good to know. They say that a charge cycle any time it's been unplugged for a little bit, even if it's just down like a quarter or a half.
No. If you unplug it and you go down a quarter, that's a quarter of a charge cycle.
Oh, okay.
So, and then
okay, I thought you meant just any time that you plug back in. Okay, well, in that case, that I can see why. Yeah, that'd be a little bit more than a year then.
I'm well over mine.
If you get to about 450 cyclesI would, you know, batteries are, despite if they're reporting good condition, they're still pretty toasted about 450 cycles.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a 17-inch MacBook Pro, and mine probably does about 2.5 hours on the battery at the moment. You know, if you're in really cold conditions, if I'm outside, it doesn't last as long. But I get pretty much about 2.5 hours out, and mine's, I haven't changed it. My MacBook Pro's at least 2.5 years old, so I'm probably well up the cycle range.
Now, if you have Apple Care, I would suggest you before you hit that 3-year mark, do send it in, because that is one thing that they do cover. When your battery starts to go bad, whether it's on a laptop or an iPhone or an iPad, they will swap the battery for you.
Even if you're up near the charge limit, or the cycle limit?
That's a good question.
No, in my experience, they hate doing that. You've got to give them a real reason to swap the battery out. Mm. At the drop of a hat, they'll say, well, that's a wear and tear item. One of those sort of like marginal things. If it's a year old and it's sort of crapping out and saying replace now, replace soon, then you probably get away with it. If you're getting towards the 2-3 year mark, certainly on an original 15-inch MacBook Pro, I don't think
interesting. I would, you know, I would certainly try to make a claim though to Apple Care, because this might be one of those cases where the guy on the phone was just saying things in a way that was a little dishonest just to get me to buy the Apple Care. But it sounded like they will do it up to 3 years, and I would think that by the 3-year mark, they would have considered that reasonable wear and tear, if wear and tear was something they were concerned about. So for that, I don't really know. But I do have a suggestion for when you do have to buy a new battery. You can get a third-party battery from a company called NewerTech, NewerTech, that instead of, I'll give you the price over here in the States, instead of an Apple battery costing $179, the NewerTech batteries are $100.
That's a big savings. Yeah, I mean, this Mark was talking about the fact that he went to the Apple store and they wanted £100 off him, £101 for a replacement battery. I thought it was kind of steep, but...
It's the same price for every battery, for every laptop, from a G4 iBook all the way through to 17-inch, you know, last of the replaceable batteries. They've just got one price fits all batteries.
Oh, right.
One thing, though, is before...
Go ahead, Will.
I was maybe before it does anything, resetting his PRAM, which I think is it Option Command P and R, all those down together at startup.
Yeah.
It flushes out the... whatever, it flushes. Gives him a good flush anyway. And so... whatever it does. Yes, if the operating system is reporting incorrectly that the battery needs replacing, that doing that will reset it.
Oh, right.
Best,
so,
of my knowledge, anyway.
But, I mean, presumably there's a performance thing along with that. If you've noticed that your battery's not sticking around quite as long as it used to, then that's a good start point. And if you then get the message, you've got to start believing it. It's not just a PRAM issue then, perhaps.
No, it's just...
just a chance, though.
You can get a one step more medieval on it. If you want to, as a last-ditch effort, if you really don't want to spring for the battery, you can disconnect the MagSafe power supply, flip the MacBook over, pop the battery out so that there's no battery, there's no power, turn it back up, hold the power key on the top down for 10 seconds, release the power key, put the battery back in, plug the MagSafe back in, and that resets the system management controller, which is the bit of the software that actually regulates and keeps track of how many cycles the battery's been through. And sometimes it can get its nick in the twist, and if you do a full SMC reset that way, you can sometimes get the message to disappear.
Is that the BS chip working? The Apple BS chip coming in?
No. It works as well with customers have bought in MacBooks and things that they plug it in and it just will not start. Just no chimes, nothing. And you just flip the battery out, press the system management reset, and it sees the battery and starts charging again and restarts the Mac. It's a kind of last ditch one up on the sort of the PRAM thing, which is a more regular fix.
Now, I'm kind of thinking, based on what you said earlier on, Andrew, that I know the answer to this question, but you're far better than I am. So Paul in the chat room wants to know, do you think that there's any advantage to doing a full discharge and recharge on a regular basis? Now, I know that used to work with metal hydride and nickel cadmium batteries. It was really important that you did that. These are lithium ions, aren't they, though? So I'm not sure whether that makes a difference or not.
No, yes? I don't think it makes a difference anymore.
Yeah, because you're saying if it registers a quarter charge or a quarter cycle, then it doesn't matter.
No.
Yeah. So you won't improve the battery life by doing full discharges and recharges.
You know, I don't know if they still do it, but Apple used to recommend this for MacBook Pros and for iPods, that maybe once a month or so to run it down all the way until the device goes to sleep and then let it do a full charge without being unplugged. But they also used to recommend that you do a cycling conditioning, and now they do the conditioning at the factory before they ship it to you. So I don't know, maybe that other part changed as well.
Because
I don't know either.
Go on, sorry, Carl.
I was going to say, this is kind of completely off MacBook things, but when I got the iPhone 4 for Christmas, I was getting horrible battery life on the thing to begin with. Nothing what I expected. And then I let the thing completely die. And ever since then, I've gotten optimal battery life out of it as to what it's expected, even better than I expected.
Yeah, I had a similar problem. I got really bad battery life, and then I went out and bought a Mophie Dewpack Air. And it's nearly double the battery life, I'm telling you. Sorry, you were going to say something sensible, Eric.
I love that case. I don't own one myself, but I've been seeing it at, you know, CES and Macworld and stuff. The Mophie Air, it's like it looks like a. I mean, it's a beautiful case as it is, and then the battery is so thin, it's like it's hardly there.
It's super gorgeous. For those of you in the chat room watching on video, you'll be able to look at it, but it is absolutely stunning as a piece of engineering, and it feels nice in your hands as well. The curve on it. It's everything.
It's kind of like, yeah. It kind of turned your iPhone 4 into an iPhone 3G.
Well, it's about the same width, I would have said, as a 3G. Maybe just a fraction bigger, but not an awful lot. But they reckon it only adds something stupid like a 1.5 millimeters to the size of your battery. Why couldn't they just make a thing a bit thicker and put a bigger battery in it, is my thought. But never mind, eh? What do I know? iPod is demising. Do we think the iPod is dead, chaps? Because that's one of the stories that came out this week. Is the iPod dead?
The big boy, the 160 gig.
Wait. I'm sorry, guys. Last thing about the batteries, just for anyone out there who's curious, Apple apparently still does have, I'm sorry to do that.
No,
Apple still does have their information for folks about how to optimize their battery charge cycles. It's apple.com/batteries.
Okay. Good knowledge. Thank you. I'll see that in the show notes. Go back to the iPod then. iPod, the fifth most best-selling iPod at the moment, is still the classic at the 160 gig mark. And they're still talking about terminating it, though, this quarter. It will disappear, potentially, in 2010.
I think it'll evolve, won't it? I mean, I think there's always going to be a market for a device that's got a big capacity. And I think as the price of solid-state memory kind of, is that the word you'd use? You know, like what I mean?
Yeah.
Instead of spinning hard disks, goes down, then I think it'll just evolve into, as it is now, but with a bigger sort of solid-state memory. I think it's always, my neighbour but one's got one. He loves it. He loves to have like 200 gig, and he doesn't want any of the fancy touchscreen or anything like that, because I think without touchscreen, with physical buttons, that they maybe last longer.
I think, well, this is spinning media, and everything around it is not. It's solid state. There is nothing there that's spinning media in terms of display. And I think you're right. I think the one thing that I've seen with the people that I know that have got them is they love the fact that they've actually almost got a little jump drive that they can carry around with them, and they can boost files to and from it as well as. Anyone still
got
one?
I use mine for music all the time.
You still got one then?
Still got it right here.
Oh.
Still got one. Classic one. I'm a music buff, and I think that's the ones that still buy it. I mean, how I wish these things would play FLAC, and I guess there's a hack to actually do that. But so I just do Apple Lausus on the on the for the encoding, and I use it for that. I mean, I've got tons of stuff. Almost my entire collection is on here, and I always go to this device for music. I got a little on the iPhone. But I look more as the iPhone, as that's where my applications are. That's where I do my mobile computing and all these things. And my iPod is still my source for music.
Now, Will, you're a big music man. I know that.
Yes. Yes.
Kyle is a very big music man and recording artist, nay. Are you two guys into music, Eric and Andy? Big music people?
Yeah. I have a very large music library, mostly, though, because it's all Apple lossless. But you know, it could be interesting if they did a just picture like a much thicker iPod Touch that had a 256 gigabyte spinning drive. I mean, that could be an interesting sort of throw it out there in the market and see what people do with that kind of machine.
I think there'd be a lot of use for that, especially if you could boost anything onto it as a storage device. But I mean, do you really need to get, I mean, this is my question to the people that you're into music and carrying it around. Do you really need to carry your entire music library around with you all at once?
No, I never... don't. Because just simply for that fact, simply because I've never been able to, whoa, did I just...
Someone hit a number key.
Wrong application in the forefront. I think simply
Come
because...
Come on, play Jingle Bells for us.
It's a bit early.
So, what was the capacity? My music library has always been so much bigger than any iPod I've ever owned that I could not do that. And so I have always had a subset of the music onto there that I just put whatever couple of albums I'm listening to at the moment onto the iPod or iPhone. I think it is really cool to have everything with you, but I think at least right, and I think eventually we'll get back to that too when we go to more streaming and when we get larger flash drives. It kind of we kind of had done that in the past with the bigger hard drives, and then flash drives came along and Apple turned everything into flash, and then we were back to just, well, here's like a quarter or less of my music collection on the device. But maybe we'll eventually get back to where the flash sizes catch up with the size of our music libraries.
But isn't it a mood thing? I mean, you listen to music when you've got to be in the mood to listen to certain types of music. You know, there's certain days when you want to listen to something that's soothing, and then other days when you want something that's a bit more energetic. And do you know what you want before you leave the house that morning? I mean, Will, do you, Carl, do you know what you fancy before you go out, or do you really need it all there with you?
For me, I don't really think of it like that. I'm afraid to say I'm still a bit of a retro chap, and if I really do want to listen to an album, I'll listen to vinyl. Nothing quite like putting a record on.
Amen. Love vinyl. Sorry, Ewan knows I love vinyl. So. Yeah, I still think vinyl's still the best sounding bit. You know, the funny thing about this is the iPod here is that I don't take it with me everywhere I go. It stays a lot in the house. I use the dock for it if I want to plug it into the stereo system sometimes. Honestly, it's just when I want to relax, put on some headphones, or it sees the toilet every once in a while when I know it's going to be a long day.
that's an image I just don't need. Will was going on about iPad. Do you know one of the things that I've actually found? This is interesting. I've bought Stick Cricket for the iPhone, and a 20-over match is exactly the right length. It's superb. Loving it. One innings. There we go. In more ways than one. Paul in the chat room saying, if I'm using public transport, I need chill out music. No, it's interesting because the iPhone rather, because it's got the 64 gig now, you can carry an awful lot of music around in that already. And it's, I mean, I've got a lot of music in there, but...
That's an expensive device. I mean, if you're going up to 64 on the Touch or the iPhone, that's an expensive device compared to, you know, the 160 gig.
Yeah.
And not only that, I feel that, you know, when we're talking about, you know, the classic iPods, we're talking about, you know, particularly probably audiophiles here. These are people that just eat and breathe and love their music. On my iPhone, it's encoded in AAC. You know, it's a simple codec similar to MP3. And... It does fine, but I know the quality of a difference when I go listen to something in, you know, in lossless. It just sounds so much better.
But you're really into noticing the difference between the two of them, whereas the general consumer perhaps isn't that bothered.
I think that for the general consumer, I think it's been shoved down their throat so much that MP3 sounds just as good. Or I remember when 128 came out and they said, oh, that's CD quality. Well, no, it's not. It isn't CD quality. And I think...
Definitely
I
not.
Think that it. I think it got people got used to paying the same price for music. That's it doesn't sound as good, you know. Well, I think most people can tell the difference if you present it.
Sorry, Eric, go ahead.
Sorry, if you've ever bought headphones from Amazon.com based on user reviews, you know that people don't know what the hell they're talking about when it comes to sound quality. I mean, I've bought headphones where people are like, "Oh, these are," and speakers too, where it's like, "These are the best." It's like you're at the concert. It's so live and it's there. And they've got like, you know, 50, and it's like, I don't think it's just artificial reviews. Like you really see enough of these that people are really saying good things about them, and you get it home and it's like, what are they talking about? Like, you just want to slap the people. This is the worst thing I've ever listened to. I've talked to people. I've got friends who are musicians and people who are real audiophiles, geeks who have been trained to hear the difference and know exactly what the compression is doing. And day to day, they still don't hear. I mean, you'll hear someone say, "Oh yeah, I'm an audiophile," and then they'll listen to the free version of Pandora, which is like 96 kilobits, which I can't even stand. I think I do agree that people have gotten used to bad quality, but I also think that they have no idea what they're missing in general.
So, I mean, here's from the business viewpoint. Do you really want to get rid of your fifth best-selling iPod out of 10?
Yeah, but if you look at the list of the top 10 best-selling MP3 players, 9 of them are Apple products.
Exactly.
So although they're going to, you look at it saying, well, they're going to be, it's the fifth best-selling one, they're going to lose those sales. They're not. They're just going to transfer 97% of all those sales straight into another Apple, probably a mini.
Oh, that's what I don't know. I mean, is the other issue here that it's just not expensive enough? Because to buy an iPod Classic is only £197, and they're getting £131 out of you for the iPod Nano alone at a gig.
I always get confused with the product lineup, because you think the Nano is going to be the smallest, but it's not, is it?
No, Shuffle.
Shuffle, yes. I've always said they should do them like small, medium, big, bigger. So...
I can see Jobs presenting that. This is
small. Here's the iPod small.
And here's the middle. I'd say this is fantastic. This and is awesome. Boom. This is going to blow you away. Here's the big one.
Did you see
that? No, that's exactly what HP did. Did you see that the other day? They did exactly that with their webOS. They did. They put up a slide that said small, medium, large.
That's what you want.
Exactly.
You know where you are with that.
Big ketchup, little ketchup. Yeah. No, did you see the boom video? Steve Jobs. Boom. Boom. Boom.
Yeah, I stuck that in the chat room last week. Yeah. It's an amazing video, actually, to see Jobs present a product just by saying boom. And notice everybody's excited.
And boom. Boom. And boom. Now, the Shuffle starts off at £40. The Nano is £131. The iPod Touch starts at £193. That's only for the 16 gig one. And then the iPod Classic tops it off at £197 at 160 gig. So there is absolutely an enormous difference in price for the storage space there. If you're looking at having a spinning media at 160, they can't replace that. They can't put 100 and, like you said, Eric, what would be nice is to put a 256 spinning medium in there rather than go for the solid state. But they're never going to do it.
You know what's also interesting, and this ties into another story I know you want to talk about, which is that Apple in 2010 commanded 64.5% of all the money spent on online video on demand downloads, so music and TV show downloads. And the year before that, they were like at 75% in 2009. So they still dominate the market in movie and TV show downloads, which are big files. And the one iPod that you can't really watch movies and TV shows on is the iPod Classic, because the screen is so small. You'd think that it might be in their best interest to make an iPod Touch that is just a thicker and has a gigantic hard drive in there to encourage people to be buying all these movies and TV shows and watching them on that device.
Would we buy it? I would.
I probably would, yeah. I mean, I say that because I'm like, I don't use it for that. I got my iPhone for that, I guess, but and then I got the iPad on top of it. Come to think of it, I've given Apple a lot of money over the last year.
Ditto.
I don't know if I would buy it. I don't know if I would. I don't know if I need that, because it's just for music for me. But Eric does have a good point there. That may be one reason why they are wanting to get rid of it.
Maybe it's actually called the iPad. No?
It could be that, too.
No, the iPad 2 is allegedly rumored to be in production. And John Gruber this morning, or yesterday morning, has said on Daring Fireball that he knows that the iPad 3 is due in September. iPad 2 sales, therefore.
It's rubbish, isn't it? It's rubbish. Mad. Wild to the moon.
It's absolutely rubbish, you think?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Why?
Really?
Well, see, now, I've got to say, there's a bit of me that looks at what Gruber says. And when he's talking off the top of his head, I'm not entirely sure it's off the top of his head. It's further down. But he's been uncannily close with a few of the predictions. The day before the launch of the iPad, he was talking about iOS 4.2. He was talking about integration with Pandora and all that kind of stuff. And then lo and behold, everything that guy said to Leo Laporte on Twit happened. It just definitely came out. And I'm thinking that Gruber's got someone on the inside, and I believe him, I have to say.
The regular iPad 2, as it were, might be announced, the sort of form factor we're used to, and they might be releasing sort of an iPad, a smaller version or a different version later in the year. But I can only think it will be that, an extra member of the iPad family, rather than a replacement of the model they've only just announced.
You're good,
6 months preview.
I hadn't thought of that. I was just being a zombie and going down the 10-inch line instead of thinking about.
But I think the one thing that Apple's shown with the iPod is that they really don't like to leave any segment of that market uncovered. And I think the iPad by itself as a single device is like, well, some people are saying, well, I want a smaller screen. There's there's a space in there for a different iPad. And I think that's the only way it makes sense. Nobody in their right mind is going to tool up for iPad 2 with all that cost and all that development and then bin it 6 months later.
No.
I don't know if I'm set on then a small iPad. Because we've heard Jobs say before in the past, he said, no, we are definitely not doing a 7-inch iPad. We have no desire.
Because nobody watches video on their iPod.
No, exactly. He speaks with forked tongue, dude. No, he speaks... That's not true. He speaks with what he thinks at the moment that he says it, but actually easily swayed into what other people think based by the numbers, I would have said.
I think he just lies. Yeah. I think he just tries to... Not lies as in...
I was giving him the benefit of the doubt, Andrew, but you go ahead.
Just, if you lie...
You go and tell the most influential man to take lie pants on fire. Go on.
No, I think he's the kind of liar who passes polygraph tests because he really believes it when he says it at the moment, even though in the back of his mind he knows that they've got a product in their R&D lab that is doing exactly what he says they will never do. But just because it's not ready for market yet, he can go out there and he feels like he can honestly say, no, we're not going to do that.
I can definitely
we're gonna
say
that. But we're not going to do it.
Are you saying, Eric, that Steve doesn't have any sweat glands?
Not anymore. The amount of radiation that boy's had.
So Ewan, you were talking about what John Gruber said, and I don't know if you noticed, but he actually went back and posted an update to that blog post that had everyone talking.
No, I haven't.
And he
seen
said,
that.
"Well, I'll tell you just what he said was that he said that in the past when he has quote unquote guessed at things, at rumors, at things Apple would do, he's been right because he wasn't really guessing. He did have inside sources, and he has a lot of inside sources. But he said in this case with regards to the iPad 3, it was literally a guess." But I think it seems like pretty sound reasoning. If you read, I mean, because I think maybe he also went back and elaborated on his original prediction. I think he makes a good point. Why have the upgrade cycle in April if it does nothing else but makes people say, well, hold off during the holiday season. Don't buy for Christmas because there's going to be a new one at the beginning of the year. Because it kind of feels like the beginning of the year. Whereas if it happened in September, that's the buying season. Everyone would be like, okay, now's the time to buy because we're not going to see one for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, he's making a logical assumption that it's going to hit in with the iPod franchise. They're going to really, instead of pushing the iPad towards more of the iPhone end of the business model, they're sticking it in with the iPad end of things.
Exactly. And also, their September launch, their September holiday season announcements are stale. They're not really doing anything new in the iPad space. If they came out with a new Nano tomorrow, no one would really care. All the interest is in the iPod line. The iPod Touch is not going to change in form factor. For the indefinite future, I think we can all agree it's going to continue to look like a thinner iPhone minus the 3G radio.
Yeah.
So it would be smart then to put the iPad to give them that press, that hype, that something to do in the fall. The other reason is that if Apple did something, I think he's right on this. I predict that the iPad 2 that's going to come out in about April is not going to be that big an upgrade. It seems almost for certain that it's going to it will not have a Retina display. Might have some improvements in the display, make it a little bit easier to read, but nothing major. Nothing, not a higher resolution. Front-facing camera, yes, probably a little bit faster processor and more RAM. Other than that, not a big change. Because they can afford to do that because all these competitive devices that you're seeing coming out now or being announced rather, the Zoom, and the touchpad and the playbook, these aren't out yet. And Apple still has a phenomenal lead in the market share. And if people still buying these things like crazy, even with all these rumors coming out about the iPad 2 being just a few months away. But by the end of the year, those other devices will be on the market, will be getting attention, and it would be time again for Apple to more quickly refresh the iPad and come out with maybe dual core processors, Retina display, you know, better GPU, and then, you know, something that will just slam the other guys going into the Christmas season.
Yeah. No, I just love the way that Gruber says, listen, I know I was cheating before, but I'm not cheating now, honest.
But he's also got on the blog there that he is clarifying on his blog, but he says that he didn't make clear enough yesterday that if I'm right and Apple is making the second iPad product announcement, this will be in addition to. So he's not forecasting the demise of iPad 2. He's forecasting a family, which does make some sense, but I'm still not sold on that.
I don't know if there is a need for a family, is there? And once you go past the 64 gig iPod Touch, what do you want after that? Do you really need 7 inches?
I'm still gonna go with my prediction that I made at the end of the year last year, Ewan, and that's a 4.5 inch iPhone, dual core processor, and we're gonna see an iPod Touch the same size. There is your middle. There's your family. Isn't everybody happy?
Yeah. So what about the iPhone 4 mini?
Yeah, they're talking about making cheaper components. Yeah. Well, that's come on the fuel on the back of the Verizon iPhone, because they reckon that they've actually made that cheaper by about $18, haven't they, than the original iPhone 4. So is there going to be a mini? Do you want a mini?
No.
Nope.
Based on the fact I've just slapped a case on mine, that makes it a quarter as long again and twice as thick. No, I'm happy.
Who's just come out with a phone that's similar to that? Somebody's, I can't remember who it is now.
With a phone that's similar to what?
To this mini one we're talking about. Somebody just brought out a phone. I can't remember who it is.
HP have refreshed the Palm 3.
It's HP, isn't it? Yeah. With the Palm operating system, isn't it? With their little slim chap.
Well, they've got the Pre and the Via. They've got WebOS. Is the OS, and it's running on the Pre and the Via now. The HP Pre 3 is the next iteration of what was the Palm Pre, and they've got the Via, which is a full length with the touchscreen, with the QWERTY keyboard exposed. So the Pre exposes it on a slider, and the other one is there all the time.
Hmm. But they touted it as a sort of the non-fat, the non-huge smartphone, didn't they? The little one. I think that's, from a marketing point of view, that's the route they're going with it.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that, I mean, Sarah, who does our sysadmin stuff for the website, she had the Palm Pre, the original one. And one of the things that she complained about wasn't the fact of the OS and the battery life, although that was an issue. It was the fact that the form factor was just too small. The keys were virtually unpressable. And she's not got huge hands or anything. I mean, she would have been, you know, she's got dainty enough female hands to have used it correctly. So for someone with my big pork sausages, I think I'd have really struggled with it. And that's the one thing I've heard from a lot of guys that have got it, is that the keyboard's just unusable. And they haven't changed the form factor at all in 3 iterations.
And of course, when you've got that physical keyboard, there's absolutely no error correction. Whereas with the on-screen keyboard, you can just point and jab at anything without even looking, and it'll figure out usually what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
Can I just a cunning tip there? if iPad users, if you get fed up with it trying to correct your words, and also I suppose iPhone 2, I never knew, but I discovered this week that if you go into settings and then keyboard, you can turn off the auto correction thing.
Really? I didn't know that.
You see?
Yeah, good man.
Yeah.
Good man. So how do you do it? You go to just general settings?
Yeah, I think so. I'll do it now. Where are we? Utilities, settings, and then it's under keyboard. Is it, or is it under general? Yeah, that's right. General, and then keyboard. And then there you can turn off auto correction. And you can turn off I haven't tried it, but the Safari one independently of that. But for general use in every other application, that's how you turn it off.
It works. It's absolutely correct, yes. Auto capitalization, auto correction, check spelling, and enable caps lock is on or off in the keyboard setting. Very good. Thanks, mate. Top tip.
No problems.
Wait, Ewan, do you want to do that? I don't want spell correction. I need spell correction, or else the keyboard would be unusable to me.
No, well, I have come foul in the last couple of weeks of auto spell correction, which is corrected to something which was particularly offensive. And on one occasion, I nearly sent it. On the other occasion, I actually sent it. Fortunately, the second one went to somebody who figured it out. Otherwise, it could have been. I did send an email or a text to someone that I'd missed, and I used foul language in it the other week. It was one of the parents for the mini and junior section of the rugby club, which fortunately as well, they sent back, are you sure you meant me to send this? No, awfully sorry. I do swear. I do apologize.
Now, did the iPhone correct to something foul because it's a word you commonly type, and so it adapted to your common
thanks,
commonly
mate.
Used words?
No, I spelt it, and it took it as well. It didn't offer up a... it's an English word with four letters beginning with T and ending in T, but it's not twit. And actually, it's actually in there. It doesn't autocorrect that, which is kind of worrying.
Interesting.
I didn't know that Apple knew that word. have we got any cool thingies? Will, do you want to start us off?
Okay, yeah. I've talked about it before. It's a piece of hardware. If you've got an iPhone and you've got an iPad, and I've only just recently got it to work, but I just thought it'd be worth mentioning it again. If you get the £25 camera kit from Apple or from ever, and then get just a cable and connect your iPhone to your iPad, it sucks in both the video and the pictures that you've taken. So if you go on holiday, for instance, I thought it was a good time to mention it, but if you're going on holiday and you don't want to take your Mac, you're just taking your iPad and your iPhone, and you want to suck the photos and videos from your iPhone into a bigger display, it works really, really well, really fast. So that's mine.
But you need the £25 camera kit, but then it just works free bunch from there.
Yeah, you just a £25 camera kit, which comes with two bits. One that is the... for an SD card, so if you've got like a DSLR camera and you're taking photos onto one of those little cardy things, it'll suck those in. But more useful for me personally is that the idea of being able to take the photos and videos from your iPhone and they're sent straight away to your iPad, and it's good.
There was a thing this week, and I can't remember for the life of me what it was, but there was something about there was something about an import setting. I'm going to have a look at it while Andrew does his cool thingy. But there's an import setting thing for pictures. That's a Mac setting. Let me have a think. I'll have a look while Andrew does his. What's your iThingy for us, Andrew?
My iThingy is a really useful app called 1Password, which is a really Mac-ish solution to the nightmare problem with the passwords. Well, pretty much everyone struggles with that, with the idea of long passwords being secure and memory being extremely poor, and then you settle on one single password for everything. You go to another site and it says, no, I've got to have numbers, or it's got to have uppercase letters in it or something, and you're back to having a dozen passwords. But 1Password, which is produced by Agile Web Solutions, is fantastic. You download it, as you go through your day-to-day life on the internet, it just pops up and it says, do you want me to remember the password for this site? And you say, yep, and it stores it in a secure vault on your Mac, which is password protected, which is a password you don't want to lose. So you just need to remember the one secure password, and 1Password basically hoovers up all your other passwords. It integrates straight into the browser. So you've got a little 1Password button on there. You just click on it and it autofills all your passwords in. It looks lovely when you use it. You've got little shelves to put your passwords on. You can fill everything out manually. There's areas in there for secure data, notes that you don't want anyone else to see, bank details, that sort of thing. They can all go in there. It's really good, and it works jolly well with things like Spotlight. If you need to launch it to check something, you just hit the 1 key on the keyboard and press return, and because it's spelt 1 with a number 1, it fires straight up. In terms of the solving password problems in the Mac environment, it's lovely. And there's also an iPhone and an iPad version.
I'm going to say, is it available in the Mac store yet?
Not in the Mac store. It's still a download, I think.
Right. Price?
But it's definitely worth doing. It looks beautiful on the screen. It's really well priced. In fact, I got the iPhone 1 for free for a while. They were actually offering it for free, but it is paid for now. I think it's about $19, something like that. But it's definitely one of those ones where you think, oh, I'm sure I can sort it out without password, without having to pay something to do this for me.
Now, what do you do if you're on someone else's computer and you need to get to one of those passwords? Because does it do that kind of thing where it creates super secure strings of gobbledygook passwords for you, and then you only have to remember your master password?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't create. Well, you can use it. It has a password creator, so it will create them for you. But basically, it stores all of your passwords for you on your Mac.
So it's different than I guess it's different than LastPass, which is like they make the passwords for you, and then you log into their site, and so it's different than that. It sounds like.
Yeah. So if you've got sort of a website you go to, not banking sites, because obviously they handle things slightly differently for extra security. But most sites you've already registered, you know, to log into the site, so you've already generated a password for that site, or you want to generate a password, you still do that manually. And then you just say to 1Password, just remember the password for this site. And it also pops up and says, do you want me to remember that? And you click yes, and it just shoves it into the vault. After that, when you go back to the site, you just click on the 1Password button, which is put into the browser up by the URL bar. You just click the 1P button, and it just fills it all in for you.
A good one. Nice one. I found the thing I was talking about, Will. And it wasn't anything to do with what you're talking about. Well, it kind of was. But it's about, there was a great article on the unofficial Apple weblog, and it was how to set up your preferences on your Mac so that when you plug an SD card in or a camera, instead of starting iPhoto or going through all of that rigmarole, all it does is immediately take all the files from your camera and dump them into a predefined folder. And it's if you go to the unofficial Apple weblog and type in auto importer preferences, it'll give you the how to do it. It's not even a script, you just do it in a preferences thing. But it looks fantastic.
Isn't that handled by image capture as well? Can you not get image capture to tell you?
I have no idea. All I found was, because it's always a pain in the butt, you have to double click and wait for it to load up, double click on it, and then you have to find out where you want to drag it to, click and drag and wait for it to happen. What this thing allows you to do is automatically set up a folder, and then auto importer preferences allows you to take the camera name or to take the SD card and automatically import it straight into a predefined folder, and then you can drag and move it out of that. There you go.
Well, one note on the thing I should have said, the whatever I was talking about, you know, that thing, the camera kit, which has got USB port. With iOS 4.2? Is that what we're doing now? Something like that.
It's 2, yeah.
Yeah, it's 2.6. It supports MIDI as well. So you can connect a MIDI keyboard to your iPad, and if you've tried something like the Korg IMS20, or the iElectribe, that sort of stuff. I mean, there's some fantastic Rebirth is for the iPad as well. There's some fantastic soft sense for the iPad. And if you want to control them using a regular MIDI keyboard, you can, using the camera kit as an interface.
So this just straight into the USB?
I don't know. I haven't tried it. A mate of mine tried it, and he had to get something off Amazon or somewhere. I don't know what he got, so I can't honestly answer that. But I can't quite see why you would need that. I don't know. Maybe is it because it's a USB connection at the bottom of the camera kit. So I assume you could use like a sort of male to male or whatever it is, female to male to male connection, unless you need something else. But I don't think so. Unless if a traditional MIDI uses that sort of five. Is it 5-pin DIN, I think it is, or something?
Yeah,
like
that's right.
Yeah.
No, you can get a USB converter for that.
Yeah, maybe that's what he's got, a converter for traditional MIDI. But a lot of these new MIDI keyboards are just USB, so I can't see why you would need a physical converter for those.
Well, the theory of that says that your M-Audio keyboard that you buy from the Apple Store should link straight into your iPad, and I've got one of those, so I'll be having a play after we've finished.
Yeah, that's
a dock connector on the end?
No, it's just the connector on the end is just USB, and the camera kit. There's an awful lot of stuff is fairly compatible with the iPad. If you take the camera kit and shove the iPad link into the dock connector, you can pretty much try sticking anything that you like that's USB based into that, and there's an awful lot of stuff just happens to work. Keyboards the lot, but as in typing keyboards. But maybe there's no reason that a music keyboard wouldn't work.
Cunning tip with that, though, is with iOS 4.2, it used to work, but they reduced the voltage or something. So most external USB keyboards don't work anymore because the iPad isn't kicking out enough voltage anymore. They reduced it when they changed the firmware in 4.2.
You've converted Springnet in the chat room, Andrew. He's saying he's going to give up on LastPass and try 1Password. Can you get away with the free 1Password, or do you need to buy the pay version?
I'll buy the pay version.
Don't be a cheapskate, Springnet. Buy the pay version.
Yeah.
Kyle, your iThingy.
iThingy. This is a cheap thing, and it's free. It's called Timeout, and it's something I've used countless times. We sit in front of our computers practically all day long. And why shouldn't we? We paid $2,000 for them. And it is one of these things that keeps, that reminds you, that says, hey, step away about 10 minutes, take your eyes off the screen, relax them. There's also other things in there. It can, you know, you can tell it like every 10 minutes, just 10 seconds, turn away. It is amazing how much time we can actually just, how it passes that we're on the computer and we don't realize how long we've been, you know, 6-7 hours, and it is a good little reminder. Just step away, relax, stretch the body.
Yeah, there used to be a firm over here called Dollar and Aitchison. There still is. They make glasses, you know, spectacles, and they used to have a free application that used to run on Windows that was every 5 minutes it would initiate a screensaver that would completely lock down your computer for 5 minutes of every 60, so you couldn't use it. You had to have a 5 minute break, and they left it go free for corporate stuff. So that's a great idea. I'm going to buy that. Looks fantastic. Free as well.
Yeah, it's free, and you can also get it in the new Mac App Store as well. It's also free there as well.
Very good, very very good. Eric, do you have a?
Yes, I've got two things actually, because the one I just thought of as you were talking about MIDI, and I remembered something that I saw at Macworld. If you go to inspired.com, I don't know how they got it's not misspelled or anything, just regular inspired.com. They make a device called iConnect MIDI that they just announced, and they were demonstrating it at Macworld. I was going to say that it's a little box like the size of a, you know, like if you picture a USB audio interface, that allows you to connect multiple MIDI devices to the same iPad, but it looks like it does a lot more than that, and maybe it doesn't quite do that, or I'm a little confused what it does. But if you're a person who wants to use MIDI on an iPad or an iPhone, or possibly even just a laptop, it looks like, check out iConnect MIDI, because it looks like it does all kinds of crazy things that you might love as a musician.
Kyle, didn't you cover this on the Sound Show or on the MIDI Show, this box?
No, not on the media show. It is something I'm going to be talking about on the Sound Show. Yes. And, it's a great little box, actually. What's the price on that, Eric? Cause I never think I ever got a price.
You know,
on
I don't know. I'm not
79
yeah, I'm
bucks.
Not sure it's out yet.
79. So that's not too bad. I mean, it's,
no, that's, you know, the dongle. The sorry. iConnect DMX dongle is $79. So
yeah, it's a good little thing. I mean, it's just definitely aimed towards musicians, obviously, or, you know, just casual players. But no, it's pretty cool. It's cool what we can do with the iPad now and these things. Really, really cool.
Oh, it looks like it has its own website, actually, iConnectMIDI.com. Oh, yeah, look at that. It's got a whole spec page. Accepting pre-orders.
Yeah, so it's not out yet. That's kind of what I thought, because I haven't seen anybody other than what you were saying at Macworld. I have not seen any like viral videos or any unboxings or anything like that on YouTube. So,
oh, here we go. It's $179 pre-order from sweetwater.com, and it's also at iconnectmidi.com for more info. It looks really cool if you're a musician who uses MIDI devices and has an iOS device. But my real pick is Paragon NTFS. No, what am I saying? Sorry, I had the wrong window open. My pick is newly released Paragon NTFS 8.0 for Mac. If you run an installation of Windows, whether it's through Boot Camp or through Parallels or another virtual machine, or you just have an external hard drive that you swap all the time between a Mac and a Windows computer, FAT32 doesn't work as a universal drive format because of its 4 gigabyte file limitation. That you quickly run into that, especially I do as a person who works with large video files. But this NTFS driver from paragon-software.com provides effectively native support for NTFS in OS X. By itself, OS X is only read-only for NTFS drives, which of course is the default format for any Windows drive since Windows XP. And this gives you full access to it, so much so that you can even create and reformat and repair NTFS partitions from within Disk Utility. It's really cool. I've used it for about a year and a half now, and they have this new version, which I haven't tried yet. They say it's faster. I guess that's all that has changed. I'm not really able to tell. But they are accurate when they say that it provides native speeds, that when you copy something over to a USB drive or something, it's just as fast as if that were a native Mac file system. So that's $20, Paragon NTFS for Mac.
That looks a really good buy, mate. Because NTFS has always been the bane, isn't it? If you've got a swappable drive or something like that, or you know, these external drives that you get where you plonk the drive in and out, hot swap.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. To switch between Windows computers, I've done that all the time. I've formatted because when you do that, then it actually becomes a lot easier to make a new NTFS partition on the Mac than it is in Windows, because Disk Utility is just such a better application compared to the equivalent on Windows. And the other thing that's useful is you can have, like, I have a little sort of a Swiss Army knife of external hard drives that has like one of every type of partition on it for various purposes, including a bootable one. And one is a big NTFS partition for those times when you need to copy a large video file or anything larger than 4 gigs. And it works beautifully. I couldn't recommend it more highly, this plugin.
Praise indeed. Well done, mate. Good one. My pick is Teleport. Teleport for Mac is available from abyssoft.com. And it was recommended to me by a chap called James Hart, who comes on the big show with us later on tonight as well. He's here. There is a piece of software called Synergy, which allows you to go between Mac and Windows. But if you want purely Mac interface so that you can use a single keyboard and mouse on multiple machines, this is the one for you, because it is click and set up. It's plug and play, effectively. You set one computer up to be the main computer. All the others, you just tell them to share themselves. And as you share them, they automatically appear in a higher level window within the software. And then the computer that's controlling them all just drags down, and you orient them however you've got. And the video wall behind me is using Teleport for Mac. And off this one single rollerball and wheel, I can move the mouse and a keyboard through all four screens. The only problem that you've got with it is if you go across to this screen on the left-hand side, for example, and then you want to go down to the diagonal screen opposite, it doesn't allow that. You have to come back to the home screen first and then go out from that. But it's free, so you know, how much complaining can you do? If you go to abyssoft.com/software/teleport, you can just get it there. And there's a PayPal donate button, and when I had a go and played with it and realized it was absolutely fantastic and worked brilliantly, I threw him $20 because it was well worth the effort. Thank you, chaps. Fantastic program. Teleport for the Mac. Just brilliant. And it works if you just want to do one or two Macs as well. I've set it up so I've got my laptop next to my main computer and that kind of thing, and swap between the two. Just before we go into where can we get a hold of you, we're going to talk about our sponsors, UK2.net. They are the people that keep us afloat, and we say it every week, and it's the same message every week. They really are fantastic to us, though. You've got to support the people that support the podcast that you listen to. If you're listening to us, it is self-evident that you want to carry on listening to us. Therefore, please click on the link on bageltechnews.com for UK2.net. There's a tracking link on there that just lets them know that you've come through from us. And just clicking that alone is enough to get us going, even if you don't buy from them. But while you're there, have a look, see at the prices that they've got and the services that they can offer. If you want domain names, web hosting, e-commerce, any of that kind of stuff, then check out what they've got to offer you, and you might be surprised. And also as well, I've had a chat with them in the last few weeks about how we integrate and get better together as a couple of businesses. And they're stumping up for some prizes. So on some of the shows in the next few weeks, there'll be odd little competitions popping up with prizes that are sponsored by UK2.net, which is absolutely brilliant. Thank you for them. We would be lost without their support. We did nearly a terabyte just using audio alone last month, so we'd be dead in the water with that. And thanks ever so much, UK2.net. Please give them a try. Where can we get a hold of you, Will?
Yes. he says, coffin. www.britishmac.com. Also, Twitter, britishmac.com/Twitter.
Yes.
No, it's not. It's the other way around. It's
twitter.com/BritishMac,
isn't it? Oh, yeah. And also, if you listen to British Mac and you want to buy a mug or a T-shirt...
the hard sell. Go for it.
You know what I'm saying?
I know what I'm saying. I know what you're saying.
BritishMac.com/podcast. Lovely, lovely T-shirts and mugs.
I want a T-shirt already. Is it a black T-shirt with a logo or a white T-shirt with a logo?
You got choice of three. We've got the classic either in black or white, or you can go for the deluxe T-shirt that has got To the Glorious Mysteries of Life on the back, the logo on the front, and it's made in California. It's a right, nice sort of thick cotton T-shirt.
Very good. Very good. I loved your description the other week of the HTC, mate. What's the name of the phone? The one with the chin on it.
The one with the chin. I tell you, it's rubbish phone. If you try one of the... Has anybody got one of those Google phones here?
I've played with it, but I haven't got one, thank God.
Oh, rubbish.
The Google One was awful.
I'm sure it might be better now, but I found that maybe it's the hardware or the software. I just don't like it.
No, it's not. The Google One was always crap, and it stayed crap.
You never mentioned Windows and... thingy joining together, Nokia, Windows and Nokia together today.
Well, I don't. I love the quote from Google this week: two turkeys don't make an eagle. And
yes,
and I've got to say, I'm waiting to be convinced that there's anything more to that than just two blind men trying to find the door. And besides which, I don't think it helps Apple. It doesn't affect Apple, so you know, we'll have a chat on it maybe on the big show. Come on, the big show later tonight if you want, Will.
What time's that kick off?
10 o'clock, mate. 10 o'clock in the evening.
10 o'clock on a Friday night?
You're spruced, mate. I know by that point, so... Most of that Tesco wine will be gone by then.
Yeah, probably.
Andrew, where can we get a hold of you?
Well, later on this afternoon, I shall be helpfully under the table, courtesy of...
Black Sheep. I know that label anywhere.
Most of the time on Twitter, at Dr. Happy Mac. Inane ramblings there. Onto internets... at www.drhappymac.co.uk. That's it, really. That's me. And I'm probably going to be off and trying to sort out some T-shirts to compete with Will there. Obviously, we've got the sort of logo.
We need some good shirts. Everyone needs some T-shirts, definitely. Yes, we'll all have a T-shirt swapping competition. Kyle, what's your T-shirt going to say?
It's going to say that I need it in the big, fat size.
It's bedtime. Where you are.
No. It's going out time. It's losing weight time. So.
Okay. New Year's resolution.
No, I don't make resolutions. I never keep them if you make them.
Where can we get hold of you, mate?
You can find me here on the network, the media show, fixing to be the sound show and the photo show. And just Twitter, easiest place, twitter.com/KyleSwagger.
Now, every week you say the sound show's coming next week. So is the sound show coming next week or is it not coming the week after?
No. It's going to be posted over the weekend.
Oh, there we go. So if you're into your music tech, then check out Bagel Tech Sound. It'll be available through bageltechnews.com. And there'll be a T-shirt coming, of course. finally, Eric, where can we get a hold of you? Oh, go on, Carl, sorry.
I was going to say, no, never mind.
Okay. Eric, where can we get hold of you?
That would be ericlanigan.com or twitter.com/ericlanigan, ericlanigan.
Jolly good, mate. 6:20 in the morning there. Are you back to bed for a nap again?
No, I'm wired this time. I had my coffee.
Okay. We'll see you again next week for Bagel Tech Mac. It'll be 1 p.m. Friday as normal. Hopefully everyone's going to show up. And... we'll be back again with the Bagel Tech media show at 3 o'clock this afternoon, which is about 40 minutes time, so Carl's got a shed load of prep. And we'll be back with the Bagel Tech big show at 10 p.m. So come and see us then. Sign in the chat room and throw some abuse if you possibly can. Hope you have a good weekend. Thanks for listening.